You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN at 1208. Hi, it's John Williams. And earlier we told you that while the market is down today, the week trend is up or giving up even more than the last time we said that. The Dow's now off 577, 578. The other markets are off similar percentages. So how do we close out the week? We'll watch that with you in this hour. Right now, though, let's just talk a little bit about a couple of things that we'll do in the show this hour. And one is about masks and protective equipment that we're also interested in. But the bright side is that some businesses are opening up. So we'll start with a little bit of the business of the masks themselves. On a phone line is Ken Ragland. He's the COO of W. Diamond Group, the manufacturer of Hart Schaffner Marks men's tailored clothing. I've been to their plant where they actually make these clothes in Chicago. I have one of their suits, in fact. I don't know if you know that, Ken, but it's a great facility you have, and it's a great Chicago story. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. And yes, I know you wear our suits, and I'm very proud of that and very grateful for that.
Yeah, as am I. So tell me a little bit about what you guys are doing. Are you still making suits? Have you pivoted completely to masks and PPE, or what are you guys doing?
We pivoted entirely to making masks. We initially furloughed the team March the 16th. The retail community that we sell into obviously was shutting down, and they stopped taking in fresh product. Spent the next few days, next week or so, with some of my senior staff trying to figure out what we could do to help. It was obvious to us we had something that was unique, and that was we had sewing capacity. We have roughly 290 employees in total. Out of that, there's close to 160, 170 that can operate and man a sewing machine. And we thought, all right, what can we do that would be easy? We thought about gowns. It's too complicated. And masks is where we ended up, and we're making now a three-layer mask. It's two layers that are a cotton or a cotton blend against the face and on the outer, and then a non-woven product that is on the interior that is, this term is fused in. It's basically a heat-treated process. It's that non-woven piece that's capturing the vast majority of the particulates in the air, and we're just extremely pleased with what we're doing, and we've been able to completely pivot, retool, and we've got a significant order pool that we're in the middle of producing. And the first, we essentially reopened about a week and a half ago. We've already got close to 100,000 masks out and shipped, and we're primarily selling to small, medium-sized businesses, but we have a order for 100,000 units from Uber. Union Pacific Railroads placed an order for 80,000 units, and I'm very honest, very proud. Cook County Sheriff's has ordered 50,000 masks that are going to the jails to keep the inmates safe. And it's been a cross-section of businesses, small and large, that we've got orders from. And we expect to be making masks throughout the rest of the year. I know it's a very scary proposition for all of us. We do expect to be back making suits sometime in mid to late June, but based on the order pool we have right now, we can make masks through June, keep our employees employed, off unemployment, and ensure our future. So that's what we're doing.
We've talked on this show and at this station throughout the day, the last couple of weeks, about the different kind of masks, and the three-layered ones are the ones that, what little I've learned is, are more protective, are more to code, if you will. Anybody can put a scarf over their face, but if you want a better layer of protection, you need three with that intermediate layer that you are talking about. So you must have gotten some guidance on how to make these things, huh?
I did, and we did. We went, frankly, and spoke to people at the Food and Drug Administration. They are a wonderful resource that gave us perfect guidance. And what we're doing and what we're making is, I would call it the equivalent of what is known as a level one mask. Level one mask is what people typically see on doctors and nurses that has pleating or baffling in the front that allows for the mask to adjust to the individual's face. But no, the FDA was very clear as to the rules and requirements, which did not mean that we can make a mask exactly to the FDA specifications, which we are, but we're not FDA certified because the process of getting our factory retooled and certified would both be too costly and would just take forever to get us to that point. So I pivoted from trying to sell to the hospitals and medical groups to selling to businesses that have a need for their employees, but they don't have the need, same level of need that a doctor or a nurse that's, you know, right there on the front line in the hospitals, what they need. And that way we're not taking masks away from them, yeah. Versus, you know, others that are, you know, need to buy that level of protection.
How does a company that's used to making suits for retailers find the customers for the masks?
It's been a combination of things. To be very honest, the most important two organizations that we've connected with thus far, a gentleman named Mark Densler from the Illinois Manufacturers Association. I got introduced to Mark. He has gotten the word out to all of his manufacturing partner companies in Illinois. Then there's a gentleman named Rob Carr with the Illinois Retail Federation. We've gotten just huge, huge opportunities from their various members, local grocery store chains, Tony's Fresh Market, for example, a huge bakery outfit here in the area called Bimbo Bakeries that are known for Thomas's English Muffins and Entenmann baked products. And, you know, again, it's all come from that. There's been other people. Sean Morrison, one of the commissioners for Cook County, is a good friend of the company. He was instrumental in getting us into Cook County. And it's been a lot of word of mouth.
I understand that I could see the need for these things. I mean, going forward, this is how we're going to live for a while. And people may choose to live this way for a very long while for their own edification. And maybe businesses will require it. Maybe employees or customers will want it. So even if you can start golfing this weekend, I think face masks are going to be part of the American fabric, no pun intended, for quite a while. If I wanted to get them from you guys, how do I order them, Ken?
As an individual, you can go to our website, which is www.wdiamondgroup.com. We are selling to the consuming public, and we're selling in a group of five. And if you order today, you'll have your mask within about 5 to 6 days. Sometimes a little bit earlier, but you'll get, we're basically turning around in about a week.
What's the price for five?
$30.
You know, I want a charcoal gray with pinstripes, and then I want the pleats on the side.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We actually have made what we will call a bespoke mask, which takes some of the wonderful Italian wool fabrics that we use. Yeah. Obviously, the wool won't be against your face. We are using a cotton fabric against your face, but they look wonderful. The only issue, and I would be very careful about this, the mask that we are making, and maybe this is the one thing I want to give your all your listeners this information, the mask is fully washable. My mask that I'm wearing that we made, I've washed it 15 times, and it has performed perfectly. It looks as good as it did the day that I first put it on. That's the thing that makes the big difference. These are not throwaway masks. At some point, you will throw them away, but it's putting far less in the landfills and thus is far less impactful on the environment. And, you know, I think that's just another plus of what we try to do and what we've developed, is something that will help save people and keep them healthy, but also is not putting any more burden on the environment than we already are.
Ken Ragland, COO of the W Diamond Group, the folks that make the Hartshafner Mark suits right here in the Chicago area, wdiamondgroup.com. Now, boy, Ken, that's what we're talking about, being clever, being nimble, pivoting. Keep up the good work and continued success to you over there.
Thank you very, very much, and good, safe, and good health to all you and your listeners.
Dale Buss joins us on WGN. He reports out of the Midwest. You read him in Forbes and Chief Executive, and you hear him now on WGN Radio. Afternoon, Dale. How are you?
Good afternoon, John. Great.
Two things to talk about with you today, if you don't mind. One is the sort of quandary that all businesses, large and small, are in, and that is, do they try and maybe reinvent themselves and pivot to capture any market that they can get? Or given the reality of maybe some long-term bad trade deals we're going to have with places like China, they should actually be focusing on bringing their manufacturing back to the United States. Talk to me a little bit about what they're deciding and how they're making that decision.
Well, to the first question about whether companies should maybe take advantage of what's going on to reinvent themselves, I think everybody from Fortune 500 CEOs to small business owners are all thinking about that, some out of necessity, some that are maybe better capitalized or are considered an essential business and have, good revenue streams going, some out of a sense of, this is a once-in-a-generation or once-in-a-century kind of opportunity. The disruption from this has been obvious, but so also, to some extent, maybe are the opportunities. So, it can be across the economy. It doesn't matter what vertical a company is in. Smart owners and business leaders are looking for ways to, try to get through the crisis, be humane, do all that stuff. But everybody now is looking to the other side, when the crisis flood kind of recedes and what the lay of the land is there. And as you mentioned, there's probably no area where that's more interesting or important than in the supply chain. And, we've heard about how the supply chain really is what crimped the economy because it just stopped working. And to some extent, American companies were reliant on supplies from China and elsewhere in the world. And when those didn't come, they shut down here. So because of that, because of the vulnerability that companies are feeling in a brand new way, there's a lot of talk now about resilience. How do you make companies more resilient, their supply chain more resilient, so they have backup supplies, so they have agreements with maybe manufacturers in countries other than China, in Mexico and Vietnam, which are rising places for lower cost supplies. And then, of course, there's the ultimate question of, do we bring stuff back to the United States? Can we? Not just because of what a company's shareholders might think, but because of what its other constituencies might think for political reasons. China is going to be our new enemy, at least perceptually, in a lot of ways. And so companies, may want to get on the other side of that.
President is barking at them again today, and the markets didn't seem to like that. But, it's funny, we can all wave the flag, but we vote with our dollars. And I think that this has been the reality in the past, never mind what I think, Dale, but if you manufacture in America and I manufacture in Vietnam and my product is less expensive, people are probably going to buy my product more than your product because my price will be cheaper.
Right. American consumers like nothing more than getting a good deal, right? I mean, the generation that it took Walmart to become America's favorite retailer was built on largely on getting goods made in China and distributing them efficiently, pricing them inexpensively, and voila, you've got the world's largest retailer. So, Americans are not going to give up wanting to get a good deal, which tells some chief executives that, I know that there are more companies now, I've talked to CEOs who are at least doing pilots. They're trying to figure out how can we move a component or something to the U.S. And that tells me that to a great degree, they're going to be trying to seek political cover. They're going to want to be able to say, well, look, we're making this half of a widget over here. Now, we get all the other widget parts from China and Vietnam and India, but, we are trying. So there's going to be a lot of that. I mean, so much of this is optics, right? And so the CEOs I've talked with have said the chances for this changing substantively are not that great. It's going to seem like it this year because it's such a huge political issue, but maybe by the beginning of 2021, the whole notion of let's just bring everything back and make it in the U.S. is just not going to get much of anywhere. Mm.
Back to your previous point about how companies can or at least temporarily need to pivot, it's easy for our previous guest, the COO of Hartshaffner Marx. They have 169 sewing machines sitting there and people that know how to cut and sew fabric. Mm-hmm. So they're actually turning out a very viable product. But for a lot of people, even though they know that's right there, they're not in a position to take advantage of these emerging markets in any way.
Right. I mean, it takes opportunity. It takes maybe luck. It takes capital, to if you're going to convert sewing machines to anything else, you're still going to have to invest significantly in pivoting. And a lot of companies have gotten attention in the short term for making masks and ventilators and other PPE and sort of pitching themselves into the anti-COVID-19 effort, like General Motors, like Ford, like so many other companies have done. But, you know, the key test for the people who run those companies is, does this really look like a business that I want to be in for the long term?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if there's a vaccine in this, you know, a year from now or less, do I really want to be making ventilators or masks? So, you know, those are also decisions that CEOs are going to have to make. They've been doing their patriotic duty in a sense. Is that really part of their long-term business model? And in most cases, you know, probably not.
Talk to me about Ford, their earnings report, and what the forecast is for them.
Well, across the automotive landscape, you know, things are bad, just like everywhere else. It's not getting a lot of attention necessarily because things are just so bad everywhere. They're lucky they're not airlines. But, yeah, Ford reported, I think it was a $2 billion loss for the quarter. You know, General Motors has signaled bad news as well. I guess the best thing that you can say about the auto industry right now is that they do seem to be gearing up to begin production again starting May 18th, at least in Michigan. Not sure what the case might be with the Ford plant in Chicago, but, you know, the industry is going to be gearing back up. They're going to be having all sorts of safeguards for workers. It's much easier, for example, to protect auto workers in their plants than it is, say, people who are in beef and pork plants, you know, where there's a lot of attention now to how easy the virus is transmitted there. But the auto plants and the people I talked to say that we'll be able to get things going safely again. That's not the problem. The question is, will American consumers be so spooked that, you know, they're just not going to be interested in buying cars? I mean, right now you can get a new vehicle very cheaply for 0% interest for 7 years or whatever. But, you know, do you have the confidence in the future or the clarity about your own financial position to be able to take advantage of that? And with cars being the second largest investment that most people make after their homes, you know, people in the industry are not optimistic about the short term, that's for sure.
On that happy note, Dale, we'll let you know.
But better times are ahead.
Yeah, well, in some ways they can't get worse. At least let's hope not. Dale Buss joins us. Thanks for your time today, Dale. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Likewise.
Yeah. Some companies are able to pivot. I literally have toured the Hartshafter Marx plant where they make the clothes. It's these vast areas with sewing machines and big reams of fabric. The sort of stuff you think you might find in Vietnam or China or Italy is right here in the Chicago area. They're still cranking out these beautiful suits. You give them your measurements and then they custom make them for you. And it's a fascinating process with highly skilled textile workers in the Chicago area still. Hartshafter Marx now making those three-ply masks. 1234 WGN Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams on a viral free Friday. All of the talk segments at the station today have dedicated the talk segments to non-COVID-19 conversation. The Wintrust Business Lunch, obviously an exception to that. But Anna DeVlantis talks to you about the other things we could be talking about these days. We're giving everybody a break. It's been both fun and a challenge, I would say, for the show hosts and producers. Bark Place owner Anthony Messuck joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's been a guest on WGN Radio before, and he joins us again to talk about how a small business is managing in a very unique space. Anthony, welcome. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. At first, we heard that dog groomers and dog care places like yours were not essential businesses. Then we heard that they are. How did that happen, and when are you able to see customers again?
Well, part of it was a surprise. We thought that all services were not allowed under the stay-at-home order. Then we talked to the state, and we have great people that I love talking to the people in our state government. They're so nice and helpful. But the kennels had been exempted from the stay-at-home order, so we quickly got ourselves back together on that. And then with the new changes on May 1st, dog grooming, pet grooming, and And, of course, garden centers and nurseries were the two new exceptions added starting today, May 1st.
I sensed a little sarcasm in your voice when you're talking about the joy of talking to people in Springfield.
No.
Or were you being sincere?
I was being absolutely sincere.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm genuinely, they're always so kind and nice to work with and really doing what they can to help us out.
Well, I'm again, that sounded a little sarcastic, but I know that you're sincere. And because, frankly, I think those faceless voices or people in Springfield have been a source for great frustration, say, in the Department of Employment Security. And so when you hear about these institutions that are supposed to be working and they're invisible, it's very easy to get frustrated or sarcastic. I think it's easy for us to get, Anthony, don't you, that those are people just like you and me going to work, trying to stay safe, trying to help us all succeed. And yet, how do you make the case that dog grooming is essential when maybe my dentist or elective surgery are not? That's kind of a funny conversation, isn't it?
Well, I would agree with you that, or I would say that dentists and some elective surgery should be allowed. Now, in terms of dog grooming, John, you and I, when our hair gets dirty, we can jump in the shower, wash our hair, dry it, do whatever we need to. A dog's coat's a little bit different. And depending on, especially depending on the breed, there are many dogs' coats who, if they're not cared for properly, they can develop skin irritations, they can develop infections, heavy matting, other problems, ear infections. Their toes or their nails must be trimmed, or they can cause great pain.
My dog needs this. When we hear Daisy coming across the floor, and Brenda said to me the other day, we've got to get her nails trimmed, and it's something we are uncomfortable doing. I would injure the dog or myself if I did it. I need somebody to professionally do it, and we'll be first in line. A lot of places like yours are booked, as I understand it. Talk to me about your staffing. Talk to me about the business you've been able to regenerate, Anthony.
Well, with dog grooming, we have been, the phone's been ringing off the hook for more than a week, and we are booked way into next week. I was fortunate that I had staff that was close by that who were willing to come back and pitch in where they could. And so we've had to rely, our primary business for the last 13 years has been daycare and boarding and grooming. We also do some dog walking and good quality pet foods, and we'll take care of people's pets in their homes. So a lot of our business is still waiting to come back. So we've been focusing on what we can do with retail and grooming, expanding where we can to get more more staff, and figuring out how we can get more product to our customers safely, of course.
Last question for you. Anthony Messick's on a phone line right now. It's Bark, Bark Place, Chicago.com. They're in Rogers Park. How long before you fully recover? How long before you think you are back to the same staffing and revenue that you had before? What's the prognosis for your business, Anthony?
I will say that's still uncertain. I feel much more fortunate than many other businesses in my neighborhood. I feel like I'm starting from scratch. But I'm hoping if we can get enough testing done and get people confident to come back out in the world, that maybe late in the fall, towards the holidays, we're going to lose the whole summer travel season, but maybe there's something could be salvaged from the holidays. But I do feel confident that many in my industry will survive and will be out there being able to care for everyone's pets.
And dog grooming services are up and running now, right? That is, if I can get in, I can go to my local dog groomer or your place today. Is that correct?
I would encourage you to call them as soon as you can. yes, their phones are ringing off the hook, and they can take services or they can take clients today.
BarkPlaceChicago.com. BarkPlaceChicago.com. Bark Place in Rogers Park. Good luck to you, Anthony. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John. I hope you have a great afternoon.
That's my plan. Thank you for that. It's 12:41. Okay, Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily update of Chicago area business news. So will 2020 be remembered as the year the music died? Ravinia has canceled its entire season, citing the coronavirus pandemic. There's been music every year at that North Shore summer venue since 1935. Boeing has launched a $25 billion bond offering that it said met near-term financial requirements and, for now, avoided any federal funding to help it deal with the virtual halt in air travel. It includes bonds that won't be redeemed until 2060. And Chicago Inno says a New York-based digital pharmacy is expanding in the Chicago market. Capsules says it's starting to deliver prescriptions to Cook County and DuPage County residents from its South Loop-based pharmacy. Some of the money for Capsule comes from Ashton Kutcher's Sound Ventures Fund. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
I just looked, Steve. I think we started the week at 23.8 or so. The question is, will we finish the week up or down? Where are the markets right now?
It's an open question. Now we're at 23,725, so down 620 points so far today. The NASDAQ down 314, and the S&P 500 down 87.
That's Steve Bertrand. Orion Samuelson, what do you see today?
A lot to talk about because there is so much going on affecting agriculture. The price of oil, for example, and the price of ethanol, which is a byproduct of the corn industry. But today is the day the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, Russia, and other producers known as OPEC Plus have agreed to cut output by 9.7 million barrels per day. And that puts U.S. crude oil just down 7 cents. That's 0.4%, $18.77 a barrel. But this is the time of year that the agricultural industry in the United States uses a lot of fuel to prepare the fields for planting and then to do the planting and then to care for them throughout the growing season. It's also interesting. I had a rather long conversation on the phone with a good friend who's a cattle rancher in Yavapai County, Arizona. That's north of Phoenix. And they're already into their county fair season. But get ready here in the Midwest if this is going to continue, because Andy Grossetta told me that it was their county fairs today and this weekend. And it's going to be a virtual reality county fair. What they have done ahead of the fair, they've gone out and shot videotape of the animals that normally would have been brought to the fair for showing in the livestock ring. And the videotapes are being judged by a cattle judge from California. And so all of the activity that normally would take place face-to-face and animal-to-animal is not taking place that week. And he said his granddaughter had a reserved champion steer, but it was judged by a judge looking at videotape. So he said, if they're a good videotape shooter, they'll maybe do better in the show ring. But that's an eye on what may happen this year here in the Midwest as well. We'll be getting underway with our county fair season, I think, about the middle of June at some of the county fairs get underway. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with them in the face of not being able to put animals together and humans together. So we'll keep an eye on that. But as far as the weather is concerned, we planted more than we normally plant last week. And so as we look at the weather that we're having this week across the Midwest, we'll probably do pretty well on getting the crop in the ground. But then what happens from there on, of course, is up to Mother Nature. The other thing I'll be talking about tomorrow morning on the Saturday morning show is the mental pain for farmers who have to euthanize animals or dump milk or dump eggs. But there's a reason they do, unfortunately. And so I'll be talking about that tomorrow, because that is becoming, as one farmer in Illinois said, it really hurts to feed animals and take care of them to the time when they should be harvested, and then instead we have to euthanize them. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, but for now, that's your money on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Ernie. It's a friend of mine named Ernie. Isn't he a nice guy? He is. He's 12'4". He works here from home these days, but it's good to hear Ernie's voice. This is John Williams, and this is the Wintrust Business Lunch at 12:49. Anna DeVlantis after the 1 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News talks to you about all things not COVID-19, although we're certainly talking about that on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Dan Patterson is the president and CEO of Moss, Inc. to talk about the wild, wild west these days. Hey, Dan, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm just doing great. Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. You guys work out of Elk Grove Village, is that right?
Yeah, that's our headquarters operation. We have another plant closer to downtown near Lake and Western on Maplewood.
What do you guys make? What's your normal biz?
Yeah, so we make lightweight, high-impact aluminum structures that support printed messaging. So we do large-format printing, and we do it on a variety of materials, but we do a lot of work with textiles and fabrics. And so you'll see our work in places like the Chicago Auto Show, but also O'Hare Airport. You'll see us in retail stores like Old Navy, Target, American Girl, Levi, but places like the Consumer Electronics Show, for example, or the International Machine Tool Show that happens every other year here in Chicago.
And you manufacture the fabrics that would display things or the framing that holds those fabrics up?
So we buy the fabric material, and we bring it in and cut it, print it, and sew it, and we manufacture the aluminum structure that tensioned, that fabric gets stretched around or over to create a display. So if you've been into O'Hare, which I'm sure you have, and seen some of the signs that hang from the ceiling and some of the concourses, 99% of those signs are ours. So there's a lightweight aluminum frame, a textile or another material wrapped on the frame, and a printed message.
Fascinating. I mean, really, isn't that an interesting business? Because you are an example of one of those things that I think you're right. We all see a lot, but we never pause and think, who made the fabric? Yeah. Who did the printing? What about the thin frame that holds it up? How does that happen? And that's a whole, I guess, business in your case. So, that's Moss, Inc. Out of Elk Grove Village. And then, as you said, downtown as well. I know you've got partners around the world. What are you guys doing lately? How are you pivoting? How are you surviving?
Yeah. So tough time, obviously. We got faced with the COVID impact like everyone else. We said, listen, we know light manufacturing. We know materials. We know fabrics. Let's do something. We got to help. So we immediately began sewing masks. So I think you had a previous caller that you were talking to about fabric masks. So we've been sewing masks in our facilities from the very start. We do about 600 a day, and those masks, all of those are spoken for already. But we launched that and said, well, okay, this is good, but this is not enough. And because we have an operation in China, have had relationships in China for over 20 years, we, of course, talked with our associates there, and we talked with suppliers, and what we discovered was utter chaos. Nothing was predictable. The main key manufacturers that we wanted to deal with were completely booked, and a huge amount of misleading information, misleading pricing, and frankly, some criminal activity too. And we just said, this is not going to work for us. This is not how we build our business. And we are based on partnerships and long-term relationships. So we decided to work on developing the equipment that we could produce face masks in volume. And our Germany office reached out to the Fraunhofer Product Technology Institute. So that's one of the top schools in Germany for engineering. So you can imagine the quality of work that comes out of there. We approached them to collaborate on designing and building a machine that could do this for us. And they jumped in, and we instantly had about a dozen German PhD engineers that were just eager to help, and they were working at some points 24/7 on getting this solution. And we're in the testing phase now. We expect to have product out that we will be sending for testing. So our target is an ASTM level 2 medical mask. So this is the number, the F2100 is what it's called. But this is a three-layer disposable mask meant for the medical profession, to more of an everyday mask. We will seek the ASTM certification, and also will be registering with the FDA shortly thereafter. So by late June, we will be in production here in our facility. And probably in the volume area of manufacturing about 100,000 of these masks per day. But we expect to quickly scale up, and by mid-August, we should be in the million masks a week range, with more to come, more capacity to come.
It's interesting, Dan, because Dale Buss was on with us a short while ago. He writes for Forbes out of the Midwest, and he was talking about mm-hmm. how businesses, if they're fortunate enough or capitalized enough, can pivot like this. But he said a question they have to ask themselves is this the business I want to be in? If I had told mm-hmm. you 3 months ago you were going to be doing what you just said, would you have believed it? And is, in fact, this a place you guys want to be?
Yeah, it's a great question, and our management team has spent a lot of time on this strategy. We're convinced that the approach that was right for us, and this is just for our company, was to do this in a very high-quality, reliable way, a consistent way. And we feel that the buyers out there, the hospitals, the GPOs, the group purchasing organizations that hospitals form, you know, the major medical supply companies, they're looking for a reliable supply partnership, and we feel that's offering something very unique, and that is not going to go away. So our hopefully we work through this immediate challenge, and in the next few months it begins to lessen, and we can go about our lives in a more normal way. But the need for this kind of protective equipment, PPE, personal protection equipment, for this kind of thing, in a reliable supply chain, we think is going to last for a long time.
Will those be manufactured here?
Yes, here in the U.S. We're actually consolidating our three U.S. operations. So we had two operations in the Chicagoland area, one in Salt Lake City, and we're consolidating into a brand new plant as we speak in Franklin Park. So we'll have our equipment there, and then we'll have also equipment in Germany. The German market is about 2 or 3 weeks ahead of us as far as the impact of the COVID and where they are in the process. The German government is very interested in us manufacturing for them there in Germany. And what's resonated with the customers that we've spoken to, and also with the German customers, is that we're sourcing materials here domestically also. So we're sourcing here in the U.S. We're sourcing in Europe. Mm. So at this point, we have domestic sources in both continents. So we think that's a platform now that we can build on, and we're looking at we have prototypes ready for the face shields.
Right.
As well as gowns, booties, caps, and a variety of other products. We do made-to-order manufacturing really well. We are very flexible, and we're experienced in a lot of different materials and technique. And so our team, we have a tremendous creative team and a product development team, and our operations group is very strong. And they collaborate, and they say, you know what? We can do this. And so
And I think that we also like to hear that they can do this in the U.S. as well as throughout the world. Dan Patterson is the president and CEO of Moss, Inc. I'm out of time, and you guys are busy, too. Keep it up, Dan, yes. And congratulations on the success I expect you all will achieve.
Well, we appreciate, John, to be able to talk to you today, and look forward to talking to you again sometime.
I hope we do.